You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Saturday, June 27th, it's Prospect 11's Aaron Nielsen and I'm Ian Clark, and we're post-match from TFC's 0-0 draw with DC United. With no goals to account for, we take the opportunity to look back on the week that was, asking if 4 points over 3 home games is a concern. If these games are the ones to worry about, or are there more critical fixtures to come? We discuss opposition's approach to Jovinko's success, and wrap up asking if TFC become too reliant on their 3 DPs, or more specifically, are they too reliant on one another? And what this means for the side through the Gold Cup. All that and more on the next 40 minutes of Eastside Stand Up. Hopefully you remember that.
Yeah.
We'll circle back to it.
Okay.
But Aaron, I think, the way that we're going to start this one off, which was obviously a nil-nil nail-biter at BMO Field.
Yeah.
And in a way, I'm grateful that I'm, dry and warm. Spent the afternoon by the fireplace watching Toronto FC on ML. No, not by the fireplace. I don't have a fireplace. But watching it on my warm, cozy LG TV. And I feel good that I stayed home in a way. Because I was
expecting the 3-on-3. I know it's the NHL, right?
Yeah.
No ties, it's 3-on-3.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to just keep cutting down until it's a 1-on-1. But I think what I wanted to start off the podcast with, Aaron, was maybe looking back on this week that was, because I think that will be a part of the discussion this week, now that we're sort of at a, in quotes, break. The league isn't stopping, but it's going to be a different team possibly for the next month. And there was probably people could say for sure there was importance on these 3 home games that we had this week. And Toronto FC comes away with a loss, a win, and a draw. And I think it wouldn't be surprising that some people might look at that in a negative light, that it was an opportunity to wrap up some points with our best players before they go away for the next, I think it's 4 league games. I just wanted to get maybe your thoughts, Aaron, on how you thought this homestand went, and maybe what your thoughts are over the big picture of this season.
Well, again, and I think we might have mentioned in an earlier pod how points in soccer are given away, because arguably, if you looked at these 3 teams that Toronto just played, I thought New York was the game that they lost, although New York were very intelligent in terms of how they played Toronto, and probably the first team this year to even do that to Toronto. But Montreal's playing a bit better than they were expected to at the start of the season. And so I was surprised in some ways that Toronto dominated that game. And then today, I think the weather had a lot to play with it. And really there wasn't, as we go and discuss the game, there wasn't really that chance to break the game open to change the game from a 0-0 draw. A lot of the cases, especially during the regular season when games end 0-0, it's almost the situation more than the game itself. It's not teams. Teams sort of go on a defensive angle, when they're 1-1 or 2-2 and they're just trying to save the point. I think at 0-0, everybody feels that they have a chance to, take the 3 points. So, I don't think the game was exciting by any means, but I think that today's game, both teams had a chance to win.
Yeah, and I want to just rewind a bit on some of the games that you mentioned. Of course, the story of the week started off with New York City FC and this approach they brought to the game that I think a lot of people said, yikes, they figured it out. They kind of came up with a template that might be how to stifle this surging Toronto FC team. And then midweek, I think a lot of people were probably pretty surprised that, in a way, Montreal didn't really bring any of that to the table.
Yeah, I was too. Yeah.
But in another way, I wasn't that surprised. I had a feeling, I'm not a big Frank Kloppas fan. So in a way, I was not surprised that from a coaching perspective, I think he may have come in thinking, hey, we've got Piatti, you know, we've got some classy players with some real pedigree on our squad. Maybe we can stand with them. And of course, they didn't. But I think the one thing that we obviously would have taken away from that Montreal game was all Toronto's DPs cashing in and really looking like this team was in sync. I mean, you saw just almost across 10 outfield players, everyone's on the same page. Even when you look at back at games like Portland or San Jose, this was the first game I felt like you could really see this, like, wow, Toronto's playing a system. Like they have a very defined approach. Like I can see what Greg Vanney is trying to instill in these players in terms of this style of possession football and how they're going to unlock teams and how Michael Bradley is linking up with Altidore and Jovinko, and as well as players like Osorio and Delgado offering support. It was, for me, this was a game that we learned a lot about what this team could be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I certainly, in the Montreal game, I liked Delgado. I don't know if he shined out as much today. You know, and the question becomes now, I guess, positionally, they're playing almost a diamond with Bradley up top opposed to the defensive midfielder. And I guess the question becomes then, if they're playing against teams with dynamic wingers or dynamic forwards, do they have enough in the back, since we already know that their center backs are probably their weakest position? I guess you live by this or die by this one, and you got to wait till you play these teams. Like, you know, I would be afraid if you're playing, even though they're not doing well this year, if you're playing against Chicago and you have an Akam or, Kennedy coming running the other way when a play doesn't go up when a shot doesn't go off. Bradley and all those guys trying to chase back and stop him before he gets a chance on net. As I said, I think they've looked okay. You know, it's interesting because, as I said, I thought going into the season that New York City FC and Montreal were going to be weak teams. And, you know, we can go into this, you know, as we just talk in the pod, but DC surprised me a bit because DC certainly doesn't have the DP qualities of other teams in this league, and that doesn't have the player who can sort of dominate the game and take the game over. And I do think that, you know, part of this is, I think this is their 18th or 19th game already this season. So the points, their points, indicative of that, and probably their cohesiveness is indicative of that. Their overall quality is surprising. I didn't think they'd be as difficult team as they have been all season.
Yeah, I think that's the story I want to get into getting into this game is, I always think, well, not always, for the last year, I've kind of thought these two teams, DC and Toronto, are for me a fascinating matchup because 2013, these two teams were so bad. I mean, just god awful. And I mean, DC was so bad, Toronto FC beat them. That's how bad DC was. And to get where they got last year and now where we are this year between these two teams and the story of how each team is getting there, DC United built around, you know, a really deep core of American players, and not just American players, but if there's foreign players, they already have MLS experience. And then also these American players with, you know, NCAA background. And then you have Toronto FC, who's turned around and, you know, they're more trying to cash in on some international connections as well as deep pockets. Two very different approaches. So I kind of wanted to just get into a little discussion there on, you know, what are thoughts of the strengths and weaknesses of that and how that kind of approach might play out in the short, mid, and long term.
Yeah, I think the funny story is if someone goes and archives previous podcasts, I think we had this conversation 2 or 3 years ago. I remember a poor Toronto FC game at the end of the season against New York Red Bulls. And we were talking about, I think we were actually even talking about DC, or we were talking about, it was after the Silva trade and what Toronto could do to improve their chances going ahead into the next 2 or 3 seasons. The reality in all sports, you know, if you throw $100 million to your chances or help what you're doing, you know, that's always going to be a better option than try to do it financially controllable like DC United is doing. But DC United is a very interesting team in that capacity. They do have quite a few. You know, they've drafted well. They've taken players like Silva, who other teams never really gave their full shot to. They've had this relationship with Richmond and USL even before, you know, the USL thing became cool. And there's a number of DC Academy homegrown guys and draft guys who are potentially good players in the league. And, you know, I think some of those positions that they're strong in, you see that, right? You know, certainly goaltending, right, where they have Hamid as their goaltender. But over the last 2 or 3 years, they've had 4 or 5 quality keepers, and, you know, that they're able to trade or give away, but still have quality keeping now. You know, the other position which Toronto kind of lacks in, you know, their center back, Boswell, a guy who was undervalued in the MLS, and DC United picked up through the draft, waiver draft. And then the other guy, Berber, who was a first-round pick overall. So, you know, it does show you that in the MLS you can develop depth and you can develop players in trouble positions through, you know, college and the draft.
That's the interesting story is for me is, and I've said it before in different podcasts, I think it was more on the Gaffer and Hooligan. I always tend to be drawn to the team that can take a little and make it go a long way.
Yeah.
You know, I am more interested. I am more impressed, maybe is what I should say, with a team like DC or a team like Real Salt Lake or a team like Sporting Kansas City who've earned their success just through football smarts and good scouting and networking and things like that. That's always been the way that I've been. That's always the sort of the success that I'm most attracted to. However, you know, I can't deny this season, Toronto has been entertaining. Tim Leiwicki, you know, I won't take his beer, but I guess I'll maybe give him a slight tip of the hat that yes, okay, you spent your money and you got us a player that's enjoyable to watch, something that has been very few and far between over the last 8 years. And that's what I think as we go into this DC United game, I think the two sort of things I wanted to talk about when we look at the roster at that start of this game, which really didn't change much from midweek. We saw Cheru still out. Ashton Morgan returns because I didn't know this, but he was sick during the week. And, you know, you mentioned him just for a second there. I think the two players that I'm still sort of, you know, watching week to week is, of course, you know, the Konopka in goal, as well as the emergence of Delgado. And I think that Delgado is an interesting story because, you know, people who follow the team closely will have known that we picked him up from Chivas USA. And there was obviously a connection there between Greg Vanney and him. Very young player. You never really know what you're going to get with these U.S. national team players, because if you're in that pool, it seems like you get a million chances and you could be great, you could be average, you could be below average. But if you're in it, you're getting chances until you're in mid-20s. But I was, you know, at midweek, I thought he looked pretty good. And I think a lot of Toronto FC supporters are frustrated with, you know, players like Jackson, Robbie Finley, you know, the more established guys. I think it's not a little bit of a breath of fresh air to see this guy who's coming in, you know, from the U21 side, slot in pretty nicely and put in a good game midweek, and he did okay today.
Yeah. I thought he was, I actually, for the Montreal game, I saw some of it on TV, but I was listening to the Impact radio broadcast, and they, other than the 3DPs, they were talking about the guy that most of the game. But one of the things they noticed is because of his, I guess, technical and athletic skills that he frees up, and I believe in that game, was he on the left, so I think Morrow was behind him. But he gave more room for the fullback. And so, you know, the left back of, right back, I guess, of Montreal was having difficulty covering both of them. You could argue that Delgado is a similar player in many ways to Azario, where they both have excellent technical skills. Do they have the strength? Do they have the awareness? And do they have the ability to be sort of full-time players and stuff like that? So I think certainly it will benefit Toronto for Delgado to, you know, make that role his own. As I said, I don't know necessarily if you're playing a tougher team, if you're allowed to have Bradley play so up high, and you might have to bring Bradley back and almost have two defensive midfielders and Azario and Delgado on the wing. And at that point, I don't know if they provide enough offense for the up front. As I said, I think they do provide certainly their long-term option, and I think they fit better with the team than someone like Jackson and possibly Finley.
And again, that's something that's I'm a little more attracted to. I like to see a player come through the squad. That fits this sort of fits our approach and fits our system. And I think that Delgado is a player, and you talk about the technique and technical ability, and he looks like he's confident for a young guy. And by all accounts, he had a really good tournament that he's coming off of. So, you know, I don't think I'm out of place saying that until, you know, kind of maybe like a little bit like a Konopka, until he has a game that's a noticeable one that he's not pulling his weight or playing at the level that he needs to play at. I don't think many people are going to say, yeah, let him run, let him keep getting these minutes in these games until he tells us otherwise. And I, you know, if we roll into this game, Aaron, you know, obviously we won't be discussing any goals, but I think the story of this game and a story of what we've been mentioning the last couple of episodes is that, I mean, even though it was 0-0 and it was a miserable day, it's not like there wasn't chances. Jovinko still had a handful of shots on goal. You know, and the statistic is, of course, that, you know, he's leading the league in shots and leading the league on shots on target, if I heard that correctly.
Yeah, that's correct.
Which is, you know, pretty impressive to come in and do that right away. But I think that's the one thing is that, you know, Toronto's just not clicking on that sort of final touch, that final ball. And whether this was a game like last weekend where they just were off by that, you know, 1 second or that 1 foot or that one touch to make the difference. And then the second part, I think, worth discussing of this game was, as the game, you know, at the start of the game, Toronto had a really nice possession and they looked like they did midweek. But as the game wore on, it started to have a little bit more feel in terms of the grittiness of the game with New York City. And then as it got later in the game, it did start to feel like it was, you know, DC did have a bit of an approach that how they were going to handle Jovinko. He was getting, he was taking some punishment. And when he was, there was even a play, if I recall, in the second half where, you know, he got away from the guy and the guy, he just grabbed his shirt. You know, he just took a handful of the jersey and just pulled him back. And that's, and it's like, here we go. I guess this is what it's going to come down to. If, and you mentioned it too, that the type of opposition, you know, if it's, if we're playing against Orlando, we might not see that, but against a, you know, an Eastern Conference traditional rival who's desperate for these points, this might be the kind of game we're going to start seeing.
Yeah, and again, I think it's interesting, you know, especially with DC being the opponent. I think it's slightly interesting to see, I saw in the Montreal game, it was very well, you know, the example was Bradley giving the through ball to Altidore when Altidore scored. And I think there's a bit of it today as the three DPs working together and setting each other up and playing off each other. Now it's not going to happen with the Gold Cup. But as the season in the later season, I think there's things to look positively towards there. I think the amount of chances Giovinco's getting, to me, is almost worrying, partly because, you know, against Montreal, getting the 13 shots, not on net, but 13 shots in total, you know, almost you don't get statistics like that unless it's a testimonial or unless the defending is not even there, right? And I think what's going to happen is game plans are going to be developed around Giovinco, which could see, you know, him being more of a target for hacking and other things like that. But it could also see some of something like, okay, we're going to try to let Jovinko beat us on our own and stop everybody else, or we're going to stop Jovinko and see if the rest of the team can beat us. So you would want a more cohesive attack and development than just one player, because in sports, it's always easier to stop the one player than it is to stop multiple options.
And you were saying before we started up, Aaron, is that this isn't something new.
The MLS has a history of eliminating active players. Now, you know, it's interesting with Toronto because, you know, part of my question is it would be surprising to me up to this point that the rest of the league doesn't know who Giovinco is, right? So it would be surprising to me, especially in the case of DC United, where Giovinco scored the two goals in DC, that they would not start implying tactics up front to stop him or to prevent him from being effective. Unfortunately, what's happened in the past, especially against games against, you know, big rivals and stuff like that, is they'll deliberately hack the guy. And I even wrote that in my preseason article about Giovinco, where I thought he'd be a successful player in the MLS, but my concern was embarrassing the player on the pitch, but even statistically, you know, if someone knows this player's getting 10 shots a game or 8 shots a game, it's basic coaching to say, do whatever you can do to eliminate this guy's threat in this game kind of thing, right? And the thing is, the interesting thing about Giovinco is I have not seen him as much as a player to know that if he's one who's going to, how he's going to react to constant hacking and stuff like that, if he's going to be one of the players going to look for fouls, or if he's going to be a player who's going to be able to, you know, get out of harm's way and stuff like that. So I'm not sure yet.
No, and today's obviously not the best barometer of that, given the weather and traction and whatnot, of what he, you know, how he will handle this over the long term.
Yeah, and I also don't think DC is a major rival, right? You know, I noticed at halftime I saw Silva and Perky almost joking as they're walking to the locker room, and I think it was probably about Perky's blow up against New York City FC. Right? And it seemed to be that these guys were after Giovinco, right? And as I said, if you've watched MLS for a long time, watched a number of, you know, Real Salt Lake Sporting Kansas City games or you know, Real Salt Lake Colorado games, you'll see, you know, embedded rivalries that are designed to say, we don't want this guy to, you know, Javier Morales is a good example of it. I think he's been taken out, and certainly he was taken out for a long time in one incident, but he's been taken out 4 or 5 times because people knew that that's how you would lose to Real Salt Lake. So I'm not saying that's going to happen. I just think it's a worry if you're looking at it from an FC perspective.
I'm interested to see, because we've obviously heard this, and Greg Vanney's was said that in the last press conference, right? Where he was saying, you know, this is why people come to see games. And, you know, obviously the squeaky wheel will get the grease if he keeps saying things like that. And there's no doubt that the league is loving. And of course, Toronto FC is loving that they have this player that's, you know, he's hitting that point where, you know, when Toronto FC goes on the road, people will come to watch them play because they have this player. That's my thought. I'm like, that's my thought about how good he's been so far.
He's got
that potential where, you know, when we go to Colorado, there could be a bump in attendance because you're going to see people know they're going to see something, which is not always the case when you're at an MLS game.
And you do, and to be honest with you, do get a bit of that. You know, if you watch Spanish Liga games, I think people give Messi and Ronaldo a little bit too much of a break compared to other players and stuff like that. But, you know, if you follow soccer worldwide, you would know in places like Mexico and Argentina, they actually hire players to eliminate the the guy with the tricks and stuff like that, just because, again, you know, it's embarrassing their team, and it's also, you know, not help. If we allow Giovinco to get 13 shots in a game, it means that we're allowing Toronto to beat us, so we can't allow that to happen.
I mean, like, they'll hire a guy to goose the other guy, throw him
well, the one, the guy, the Javier Morales one was that. Like, they brought some, it's a great story, MLS story, but they brought a guy in who had issues with Morales in Argentina. And literally, 20 minutes into the game, he just ran him over, right?
Yeah.
And I think that he only played 4 games in the MLS. So, you know, I don't know. You know, I think the MLS has matured since then, but you might get, I'm trying to think of the, maybe Jason Christ is the guy, but you might get some manager who just says, hey, you know, for the good of the league, we're just, you know, we can't have this guy getting 13 shots a game against us.
And, the one thing I wanted to sort of touch on as we look ahead to this next month that's approaching, but the one outro point or observation from the game is, of course, you know, the next month we're going to be down some players, and how the likes of, especially, you know, Bradley, Giovinco, Altidor / Moore have built some pretty good synergy and cohesiveness. So much so, you know, there was a point in the second half where Michael Bradley had the ball and Robbie Finley made a really good run into open space. And you saw it. Bradley saw him, and he just saw him, and he was like, nope. And he turns and looks the other way. Now, I think most TFC supporters and listeners will say, well, I mean, it is Robbie Finley is not exactly instilling confidence in anyone. But B, it does speak volumes to me that it did feel like down the final stretch, you know, people sought out Giovinco at all times. People sought out Michael Bradley at all times. Even Jay Chapman would just knock it off 3 feet instead of carrying it himself to set up the next play. So when we look ahead to this month where, you know, we have, I think it's 4 games, but some important games against some good opponents, obviously LA, the return match against New York City. You know, we also have Philadelphia and then Columbus Crew. I mean, those are all technically, I mean, LA is not a true rival, but I guess we could say New York probably is now. Philadelphia definitely is, and so is Columbus.
Well, you also think all four of those teams would, you would count as teams that would have plans for Giovinco or would be, you know, more cognizant of his presence and stuff and try to do something against it. You know, I'm almost interested in your opinion because I think I was on the podcast with you when Giovinco first started to shine, and you almost look forward to the time when Bradley and Altidore wouldn't be there and Giovinco could be the sort of leader.
Oh yeah, I take that back. Okay. No, just kidding. Go ahead. Go on.
So, you know, and at that time you sold it to me very well, right? Because you thought that, I guess your point of view was that Giovinco cared or was looking at the lesser players more than a Bradley was, and so trying to involve them more into the game. Yeah, no, I think it'll be interesting. I think, you know, I think it partly depends on the players who are missing from the other teams when Toronto plays them, you know, because I don't know the exact, you know, how many guys are leaving the Gold Cup from those teams. I assume Adu would be gone for Philadelphia, for example, and maybe Mix from New York City FC. It's an interesting dilemma with Toronto, right? Because, you know, when the 3DPs are playing, you kind of want them to be, you know, on fire and playing together and doing very well. But, you know, you also want guys like Chapman and even players like Moore and Finley, you know, to develop themselves as more of useful pieces as the season goes along. I'll say one thing, you know, I think their game's on right now, unless the rain canceled it. This is one partly they haven't played that many games or as many games as the other teams, but this is one of the places that I might have liked to see Toronto's FC use Toronto C2 and maybe send down a more Finley if he wasn't going to be a prominent player in the upcoming MLS game, to play him in a TFC 2 game just to keep him in shape, but to also, you know, to allow him to develop, play with the player, with the other players on the pitch and stuff like that. So, you know, it's the weird thing, right? Because we don't know, because we don't see these players play with each other that often. It's, you know, it's almost like a new season. We don't know how well they are going to play together with each other.
Yeah. I will say, when I made the comment about this Gold Cup break, you know, I think in the last short while is some of the best form we've seen Michael Bradley in since the start of last year. I thought the game midweek was the best game I've seen him play since that Columbus game last year. I think it was the second or third game of the year. That was one of the best games I've seen him play since then. So when I was saying that, you know, I kind of was like, Michael Bradley has not been living up to all this stuff, and he plays better when he plays for the U.S. than he's ever played for us. So, however, that being said, I do still think that, going back to the point, my observation through this game, where there does seem like the triumvirate of DPs seem to be consistently looking for one another on the field, that if we eliminate, well, obviously we're eliminating two of them, we have to involve everyone else. It's not just that, it's just that now these guys need to work harder because they can't just lay it off to one of their superstars. People are looking at them now to get the job done.
And you know, I will say, you know, again, you know, at the beginning of the season, I did have Toronto finishing fourth in the division. And it wasn't because I thought player for player they deserved to finish fourth. I thought it was partly because of players leaving due to circumstances like the Gold Cup and other situations. And I also thought that realistically, the way the, you know, the MLS playoff is set up, finishing first to fourth, there really isn't a huge difference and a huge advantage finishing first or winning the, you know, the President's Trophy or whatever they call it, the Supporters' Shield. So arguably, you know, where you want these DPs to shine is in, you know, October and then hopefully in November and then, you know, knowing MLS, hopefully December when the final takes place.
In a snow, so, at a snowy BMO field.
So, you know, and that's, you know, it was that Montreal game, you know, that is, you know, I was ecstatic for that game. And, you know, I think a lot of people who probably see Montreal as their main rivalry probably loved that performance. But to me, it was what that performance can show, or how well they could play important games when important games matter. The other thing that I do think is an advantage for Toronto is that Bradley and Elsner will be playing together with each other, with the United States national team. And that was one of the things which we haven't seen. We did see, you know, I think Bradley's assisted on at least a couple of goals, maybe three goals that Elsner scored this season. But that was something that even in U.S. national games before this season, you know, they've kind of worked together. And I think the way, I think they're a good tandem, because I think, you know, the question about Elsner is the effort he gives, but Bradley always puts a huge amount of effort, right? So, you know, Bradley can do a lot of the work that, you know, Elsner might not do, but then also Bradley trusts Elsner to put the ball away when he needs to put the ball away, right? Yeah. And so I think that's going to be a key. You know, we're not going to win the MLS championship without all three DPs playing a key role throughout that season, including the playoffs. So I think that's the goal of Toronto going forward.
To sort of like tie in some of the discussion and going through this Gold Cup, I mean, I sort of said it, but it's also, like I said, it's an opportunity. And I think we have some of the players, a guy like a Benoit Cheru, you know, if he gets fit, and of course, like a Delgado, that can emerge and be reliable and give, you know, supporters and the club confidence that, you know, and of course we still have Jovinko. It's also a test, and also even for Greg Vanney, because this might not be the only time, whether it's a tournament or injuries, that he's going to have to change things up, and we won't be able to rely on our top players to get a result. But I, you know, one thing I wanted to add on to this is that, you know, before the game, I was trolling around everywhere, Twitter and forums and stuff like that. And I saw a comment where someone outlined saying that this was one of the most important games of the season. Looking at it, I guess, from the perspective of getting these 3 points before we go to this break and needing them. But my thought is, It's not this game. It's going to be the ones when we come back from the Gold Cup that are going to be the critical games. And I think that's traditionally where this team has fallen down. I'm thinking, you know, I go back to 2010 before that World Cup, where Toronto was on the cusp of, I think they were in the cusp of second. They were near the top of the table, and then they had a lackluster game against Kansas City, if I recall correctly, excuse me. And they came back from that, and their season just went pear-shaped. And it's not the first time. And of course, we saw that last year too, when Michael Bradley came back from the World Cup. So when you look at the three games that have come back, it's away to New England. We're hosting Orlando and Kansas City within the same week. That's, for me, the stretch that's going to be where we need to pick up the most points.
Yeah, and for me, it's consistent play throughout, right? Because that confidence, will keep, hopefully, you know, the motivation and the motor running. So, for example, if they can get, say, 6 points out of the next four games, then they're probably still going to be in a middle-of-the-pack playoff position. And so when the players come back from the Gold Cup, they'll be equally motivated for, you know, those upcoming games and stuff like that. And that's the thing, I think, for Toronto. I think the thing is to, number one, separate yourself from, you know, the Philadelphias, the Montreals, the bottom teams. And then number two is just to have a consistent run, so you don't put yourself in one of those losing streaks like you had last September. So you know, hopefully you don't miss the playoffs, but more importantly that you're, you know, one of the problems that we've had, especially with Canadian teams going into the playoffs, is they've kind of slipped into the playoffs, right? They never really, you know, they've had strong starts of the season, but then had poor backs of the season. And so the playoffs end in one game or two games, right?
Yeah.
And so I think to be successful in this league, you have to be consistent, number one, but then be able to turn it on when you need to turn it on, including that, you know, playoff stretch or other stretches throughout the year.
Right. And I think as to add on to that as well is that, you know, not putting yourself in a position where created your own mountain to climb. You're not putting your, and this is, I mean, this has been the history of this club almost every year. And it's the whole discussion I find about, except for this season, where you hear people saying, oh, we're mathematically still in it. And I think, have you not been watching this team? I mean, they can't string together two or three wins for their life. You know, three draws in a row against some of the worst teams is not how you sort of, you know, TFC marketing builds up an unbeaten run. That's no confidence in this team trying to make the prayer.
Well, and the other thing, and this is, I still question this, but this is more of an MLS question than a Toronto FC question, is how much did the DP care, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you have Giovinco, who comes from a league system, right? Has never been in the playoffs in his life. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the one thing that is great about Giovinco the Entertainer, but it's also concerning about Giovinco the Entertainer, is he doesn't seem to care or change his style of play based on the opponent. Right. And one of the things that has been great to see him play is when he's playing against a weaker opponent or in a game where they're already up 2-0, he's still trying, he's still shooting, he's still scoring. Right. The thing is, you know, I don't know if the one concerned about Giovinco or other DPs is, you know, how much do they care about winning the playoffs or winning the MLS Cup? And that might be something more that you put on the shoulders of a Bradley or an Altidor who has an American background, or even the players on the team who have a deep history in the MLS, right? Who realize that, you know, they've gone through 5 or 6 MLS seasons and struggled. And the real, you know, prize or real victory at the end of the day is how well they do in that playoff.
Right. And I think it's an interesting, I won't go too down far down this rabbit hole, but you know, I love to talk about MLSE. Are they looking at patting themselves on the back saying, we have a guy that sells tickets. They don't give a shit. You know, they don't give a shit if there's a trophy at the end of this.
I can guarantee that MLS reward will be making the playoffs and not winning anything after that. I think if, you know, we see it already with how the Raptors or the Leafs play, right? You know, just getting in it is what matters, right? And I don't think, you know, again, I think if you know, as I said, I think MLSE's goal is to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'd be very curious to see if this team is like, you know, one and done in the playoffs, what the narrative is like that comes out of MLSE and Toronto FC, if they just kind of like say, what a great season, man. Giovinco, let's do a new anime video of him highlighting all his highlights from the year, something ridiculous that nobody really cares about.
Well, on top of that, you know, because again, well, especially when you're dealing with the marketing side, I don't think they really understand what the team is and how the team changed as years go by. But they'll probably see it also as a building thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, you know, certainly ironically in the MLS, like Montreal a couple of years ago, just making the playoffs doesn't mean you're guaranteed success afterwards, right?
Right, yeah.
Making the playoffs might be the stretch that gets you there. But who knows, you know, again, who knows Giovinco, but even guys like Giroux and players like that, you know, are they motivated to do this again just to make it a couple of games farther, right? And so, I guess to wrap this podcast in a tight bow, it will be interesting when we analyze the playoffs at the end of the season, the teams who do have these, you know, historically, these MLS players, and how well they do compared to this new sort of DP direction.
I think it'll be interesting too, Aaron. And I think on that note, we'll leave it at that. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. Because obviously,
Steve, sure, no problem.
We usually on a day like this, Steve and I get bundled up in our Deadliest Catch Halloween costumes. But I kind of really thought about it.
I thought one of you were a witch and might melt if you said okay.
Yeah. So, you know, looking ahead, full disclosure, I am not going to be in the city on this upcoming weekend. So whether I catch the LA game sooner or later, just keep an eye out for that. But for sure, we're going to be back in the New York City FC game. I am not going to miss that one. That's for sure. Aaron, Prospect 11.
Yep.
That's where people can find you.
Yep.
I don't know if there's anything you want to plug, anything you want to throw out there. I've been seeing you guys are doing tons of stuff, and the Pan Am Games are coming up.
Yeah, yeah. I think the one interesting story is recently, and we talked about it, but Kamal got a chance to report from the Canada game, you know, the Canada-Dominica game. And one of the things he got to talk to was Sal Tiet and talked about his story about not going the traditional MLS development route and trying his opportunities in Europe. And, you know, his point of view on that and how it's improved him as a player, but also concerns about going in that direction. So I think it'd be a very interesting article.
Well, that'll be exciting because Sam Piet is definitely looking like he's going to be the defensive midfielder or the holding mid for the future of our senior men's national team.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, great. So people can look out for that. They can get you on Twitter at ENB Sports or at Prospect. Is it Prospect XI?
Yeah, Prospect XI.
And people can catch me at Clark RNO. Email us at info or have your say at RedNationOnline.ca. Again, Toronto ties DC 0-0, but there still was obviously plenty to talk about and plenty to look forward to. So thanks again, everyone. Thanks, Aaron, for coming on. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter at Red Nation Online or via email at info or have your say at rednationonline.ca. Get in touch with us. Let us know how you thought the team did. Agree, disagree. It doesn't matter. Also, check out our other podcasts on Red Nation Online, From the Black Hole, Ours is the Fury, The Footy Roundup, and our interview series. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.